talking about the value in the Lou Dort line of made threes. Get Steph. We were there was so much Dort enthusiasm yesterday. Steph Curry subtly reminded us that was a conversation that was not accurate.
The entire crux of that, though, was that Lou Dort was going to be guarding Steph Curry, correct? I think that was kind of what we had. That was kind of the rub there.
What if Lou was out there, what do you think? I mean, instead of 11 threes, was he get 8?
10?
9?
Yeah.
10. Right, that's right. I mean, let's not disrespect the great Steph Curry than we already did yesterday.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. He's incredible. He is incredible.
147 to 109. 50-point third quarter for the Warriors. That's impressive. It was, however, a fantastic night for Oklahoma City. If you look around the league, everything falling into place for the Thunder. With the exception of the Pistons-Clippers game last night, the Orlando Magic beat the Chicago Bulls, the Cleveland Cavaliers beat the Charlotte Hornets, the Washington Wizards won again on the West Coast at the expense of the Sacramento Kings, but that's fine. Even the Toronto Raptors, who are kind of made a sneaky charge at the bottom of the NBA standings, beat the Spurs last night. So, huge night. Oklahoma City has now lost 11 of 12. They are in prime tanking. I think we need to come up with a rating of the best Thunder performances of the season, right? We usually do that, like, what was the best win of the year, best performance. This season we should do it in reverse. This one goes up there, right, as one of the worst performances of the season.
It's got to be. I'm thinking probably several of those games come in this stretch here of 8 straight losses, at least 3 of these games.
I mean, and they had 2 just in recent memory, again, where every member of the opposing team had a positive plus-minus. That's difficult to accomplish and pull off. Hey, you mentioned to me off the air, do we have Billy Donovan's audio from last night?
Yes.
Okay, all right. So yes. The Bulls, they go out at the deadline and make these moves, and they're applauded. I think it was, to get Vucevic in there was outstanding. And it looks like, okay, well, Chicago is going to be a team that makes a move up in the standings. No, that's not happened. There is little to any defense being played by the Bulls right now. To allow the Orlando Magic, those guys masquerading in those uniforms right now, similar to the Oklahoma City Thunder, in their efforts to put players on the floor that really shouldn't win an NBA game, they allowed 115 points to the Magic last night. Billy Donovan apparently was quite irate.
We are not in a position right now to be looking at anybody and thinking that we're better than anybody. Like, that to me is the biggest mistake. You know, it doesn't make a difference who we line up against. I don't care if it could be a college team or a high school team. If we're not going to, really be desperate and have that sense of urgency, I think this idea that when we sit there and say, well, this team's record is this, this is one of the worst teams. Where are we at? You know what I mean? Like, that's where we're trying to build ourselves out of. And I think there's sometimes this perception that, like, oh, wow, like, this is a team that's, buying for a championship. No, we're not. We've got to build those habits, and we have not built them on a consistent enough level. But I don't look at it at all like Minnesota's record, Orlando's record. We don't have that luxury. Because you know what? Is Orlando saying the same thing about us? Is Minnesota saying the same thing about us? Is Memphis saying the same thing about us? I just don't think that that's a really, really a good competitive thing to have when you start looking at other teams. I think what you have to look at, and I've always said this, what kind of standard are we playing to?
What did Memphis do to get lopped into the Minnesota-Orlando category?
Somehow pissed Billy Donovan off. I don't know.
Memphis has got a good record. They got a way better record than the Bulls.
He was just grasping for straws there. I never heard him that fired up, or very rarely at least, here in Oklahoma City.
It's a Chicago Billy Donovan. That's not an Oklahoma City Billy Donovan. When you're in Oklahoma City, I think you go through the mechanisms of the Prestyisms and you kind of speak in kind of shaded language. That wasn't very shaded language. I think he wasn't trying to disparage the Orlando players. You know what I mean? For the Magic last night, again, who Vucevic was traded to, there's maybe a little bit of traded from, a little motivation there. James Ennis, he hit 5 of 6 threes. Gary Harris, 3 or 4 threes. I mean, what a vagabond roster that is. It was a bad loss. Very, very bad loss for the Chicago Bulls.
Disappointing. It should have been a playoff team. I thought they were going to be a playoff team, you know, with the Vucevic addition for sure, but that hasn't worked out at all.
I think what they did at the deadline is instead of pretty critical of what the general managing is behind this. They went out and they just got guys. Like, let's get the best available guys. Vucevic, right? He's an all-star. He's a great player. Clearly, we could use him some way. We get him. We get Tice from Boston, who I liked, and he had a good game last night offensively. But I think that they haven't done a very good critical analysis of what they need on that team, right? I mean, like, what are going to make the parts that we have better? And I think that they're just all out there freelancing, and they're not necessarily playing very well together or have any kind of defensive clue of what's going on. And right. And this is a year two, Matt, and there's no practice. When are you gonna practice and learn how to play better defense if you have some breakdowns of the core of your defense? There's no time.
And yeah, and there's so many injuries this year. I think the teams are really, really worried about that. You know, trying to rest guys, get them as much rest as possible.
Why did Lou Dort not play last night? Just rest?
I'm guessing so. I mean, the obvious, easy, you know, the low-hanging fruit is to say that he played too well the night before.
Lou is 21, right? 20, 21? Not a guy that you would think of that comes to mind when you think of an NBA player that needs rest after a back-to-back.
He is 21.
21, man. Boy, I didn't ever need rest at 21. You're good. Get out there and do whatever you want.
I do think it's a built-in excuse this year because the NBA, it's absolutely going to be something in the offseason that the NBA and teams talk about is rest, especially with fans back in stands. But this year, it's kind of the NBA's own fault, if you can call it that, you know, with the compressed schedule.
All right, I totally agree with
built
that.
Built-in excuse.
This year is whatever you. This is the one. It's not a very good precedent to set, but this is the one year where you get all this out of your system. You're going to do whatever you want to do, right? I mean, if you want to sit guys don't want to play, guys want to go away for personal excuse, personal reasons. The Thunder are going to shut down basically two players for the rest of the year. One has an injury, one didn't. That can't happen next year. Like, they've got to make it more difficult on teams to tank. I was thinking about this morning. Sport, that is a great thing that they have in soccer, relegation. Relegation is awesome. Now, the structure of basketball in America isn't the same as the structure of soccer in Europe, but all of a sudden, if you reap all of the rewards of being in the NBA, which is the richest league in basketball, and you want to be bad so you can get a high pick, then, you know, you may have to go down and play in a lesser league, less revenues. I mean, that's pressure. Huge, huge pressure on staying in the upper division. A lot of interest at what goes on at the bottom of the table at the end of the year and how the teams are coming up from the championship league. All of those things are. But the NBA's tanking problem is getting pretty serious. And for Oklahoma City, we had this discussion last night, you and Jim and I did via text. They've got too many good players to tank next year. Unless they do some of the same things that they're doing right now. They're going to have one really good rookie or possibly two really, really good rookies next year to put with this team. And if you have, are you going to shut Al Horford down again? Like, it's harder this year to trade his contract than next year. It's harder next year to trade his contract than the final year of his contract. But is he just not going to play? Is he basically going to retire because he signed one of the best player deals in the history of the NBA? He's too good. He's earning too much money to play. But you have to play Shai Gilgeous-Alexander next season. You have to play Lou Dort next season. You're going to have to run those guys out there. And the Thunder are, I mean, incredibly, even in tank mode, this says a lot for Sam Presti and the way that the team is run. They're better than a lot of teams in the NBA. Probably better than what? Matt, if they were going to make a legitimate attempt this year to make the playoffs, they are probably better this year than how many teams? Eight teams? Nine teams?
Probably so. They probably could have, you know, if they wanted to, been in the play-in, at least angling for the play-in.
They would be competing for that. I think they would be competing.
Yeah, I think so.
How do you even attempt to orchestrate a tank next season if that's what you think is best for the organization? Oklahoma City will get to keep its own pick next year if it does not make the top 15. Have one of the best 15 records in the NBA. If they get to keep it, if they don't.
Right.
If it goes to Atlanta, if they finish in the top 15 next year. So there's going to be some impetus not to finish in the top 15. Now, maybe they legitimately try to win games next year, and that's not going to be in the top 15, and they don't make the, you know, they don't make the playoffs or whatever it would be there. But Oklahoma City's better than Minnesota. They're better than Houston. They're better than Detroit. They're better than Orlando. They're better than Cleveland. They're better than Washington. Better than Sacramento. Right there with New Orleans, I would say. Certainly could compete with Charlotte, who has a better record than them.
I'm really split on this, Mark, because on one hand, like, tanking is not something that happens over one season. It really happens over the course of multiple seasons, right? Like, you don't see a successful tank job. That element, absolutely, but you don't see a successful tank job pulled off in just 72 games. Like, it usually takes at least several seasons to pull yourself out of that rebuild. But on the other hand, I am really worried about the fan interest in this team. And in a small market, it's in your best interest to put a good product on the floor, at least some names that people can latch onto on the floor. Well, so that's kind of where I fall on it. I'm kind of split on that.
Then here's the way you tank. I mean, here's the way you tank then. If you really want to tank next season because you think you need to tank and tanking is a three-year rebuild, you trade Lou Dort and you trade SGA because they're too good of players to have on the floor to lose games night after night after night.
And I would consider trading a guy like Lou Dort because as great as his contract is and as much as I like the guy, I think that he is a tremendous player. There's no guarantee you'll get a guy with star potential like SGA back.
So I
think he's kind of untouchable, but I don't know if anybody else is, in my opinion.
Okay, but if you want to lose next year, you can't have that many good players on your team.
No, I agree.
So I will ask Royce about this. And the same thing, too, is that if you want to try to start building back up, you're losing Lou Dort in 4 years, or you're paying through the teeth for him.
He'll be an unrestricted free agent.
I think the love of Lou Dort is fantastic, and I'm not trying to oversell how good of a player he is, but he's a pretty good player right now. Even Tim said it yesterday. The guy's an unrestricted free agent. It doesn't come with the rights of holding draft rights to him. So unlike a pick like SGA, where the Thunder can sign him to a max deal and force him to stay in Oklahoma City through his second contract, Lou Dort can say, peace out. I'm gone. Are you going to be able to keep him in 4 years? And are you going to be able to keep him, I mean, anyway? Is he going to want to stay here? And are you going to want to pay what you would have to pay to keep him on the roster? Are you ready to compete for the playoffs in season three of Lou's contract, which is next year, right? He's got 2 years left on his deal after this one.
That's right.
4-year deal.
That's right.
So he's got 2 years left. Next year, Thunder realistically aren't going to the playoffs. Wouldn't seem to me to finish in the top 15 of the league, but in Lou's final year of that deal, are you going to be going for it at that point? This is where everybody gets frustrated, and I know you talk about this a lot, where everybody gets frustrated with, oh, more picks. We've got 34 picks. We're never going to have all those picks. What are we doing with 17 second-round picks? That's going to be up to Sam Presti to be creative and have to move a lot of those picks to try to, you know, kind of finagle the roster in a way where maybe next season they try to compete. They've got enough picks where they try to compete, and they can try to trade into the first round, or they can move around players. And I absolutely think you're dead on, 100% accurate. Most of the people that go to games at Chesapeake Arena are there to see the team compete and win. They're not there to see the development of Kenrich Williams. We like watching that. I mean, we live, eat, breathe, sleep the NBA. We're watching every game, no matter what. But the fans are going there for a good time. They want to see the home team compete and win. They want to go see the home team get killed. Next year, I would just think that I know that, just lose, get pick one, pick three. It's still hard to manage to keep that roster together, as Oklahoma City found out when they had to deal James Hart. I mean, there's problems everywhere. But I think that as with as many players that appear to be decent on this team, they can't try to lose again next year the way they're trying to lose right now. I mean, this is it's really kind of hard to watch some of the things that are going on out there. All right, man, we got all kinds of stuff going on. We had a no-hitter in baseball last night, which was fantastic. We've got more NBA to discuss. Really fantastic game between the Grizz and the Mavs. Go ahead.
Some cool Hall of Fame inductee stuff that just came out, too. Presenters Sweet. For people who are going in.
Nice.
Including Eddie Sutton.
Okay, cool. We've got the transfer rule and college to talk about. We want to also talk to you. We are at C&W Tire here today, 25 North Council Road, 787-6711. Notch's Tires, they do it all. They've got the full line of BG products to keep your car running right. And the Sports Animal Special today is a good one. 10% off any set of four tires. When you mention the Sports Animal, that can save you a bunch of money. If you need new tires, come take advantage of the deal today here at T&W Tires, a place that does it best. Locations all across the Southwest United States. Family business for over 40 years, but I love the location on North Council Road. Quick break. Back with more of the Middle of the Day Show right after this. With that performance, right?
That couldn't be.
Hit. We're going to have a no-hitter every other week or two, maybe once a week.
I'm fine with that.
Musgrove.
Really close to perfect game.
It was. He hit batter. Ends it at 8 1/3. That's a good effort. And a good story, right? I mean, Rodon is really kind of struggled a little bit. So,
yeah. Matt Meyer told me he's, I think, the first pitcher to throw a no-hitter like just 2 years removed from Tommy John surgery.
That's correct. Yeah, he was had Tommy John surgery, high ERA, hadn't pitched a whole lot, but he's had a couple good outings this year.
Seems like a solid guy.
The White Sox.
Seems like a solid guy, so I was happy for him.
It's better for me in my World Series pick, White Sox. Chances are pretty good that I forget about what I picked in June to make the World Series. Well, the White Sox aren't going quite as strong as I thought. Lance Lynn going to the mound today. But they do have some pitching. If he can pitch that well with the other guys that they've got in that rotation at the back end of the bullpen, maybe so. Maybe the White Sox can hang in there.
I thought it was an interesting conversation you and Barry were having about Yanni Molina at 11 o'clock or so.
Hall of Fame, no Hall of Fame.
I think so. The longevity and the defensive prowess is what does it for me. And he's not that bad of a batter.
He's a good hitter, but the power numbers aren't there. But defensively, I mean, there's more that goes into a catcher than, like, not having pass balls or throwing runners out at second.
Right.
He absolutely, I mean, teams do not run on him.
Right. No, you're right. You're right.
I mean, he's going to throw you out. I mean, very rarely do people steal bases on Yachty.
You can't quantify that, really, but it's...
You can't. I think that for the eye test, I think he would deserve to be in. I mean, if we said today that he was the best defensive catcher of all time, I think people that were Pudge fans would definitely call in. Pudge has got a lot better offensive numbers than he would have. But yeah, I think defensively, I think all around, the way that he was able to help the pitching staff. Well, they had a terrible manager, I thought, with the pitching staff, in Mike Matheny. I just couldn't stand Mike Matheny and his approach to the bullpen. He is always going to the pen early, made it really difficult on Yachty, but we'll see. And it's kind of interesting is I don't know, I mean, how many more years is he going to play? I mean, he's hitting 340 this year in a lineup of guys that, you know, there's spots in the Cardinals lineup that just can't do anything. So he's having a good season. My guy Corbin Burnes pitched yesterday for the Brewers against your Cubbies. That dude is filthy. Did you watch any of that now? I mean, he's up to 18 1/3, 4 hits allowed, 1 earned run, 30 strikeouts, no walks. Hasn't been done to start a season since 1906. 30 strikeouts, no walks. That is fantastic. This dude has got nasty stuff that's moving all over the place in the mid-90s. That is almost impossible to hit. The only run that he's allowed is a home run from Byron Buxton, Minnesota, opening day, or second game of the season, opening series of the year.
Mark, I was talking with a caller about some of the technical issues we've been having. I'm assuming you're talking about Corbin Burnes, who's been a
yes. Yeah, did you see any of the Cub game yesterday?
I caught a little bit of it, man, and Corbin Burns, their whole pitching staff for the Brewers is amazing. But that was a whooping. That was a whooping.
The movement of his, he's just throwing so hard. But he's fun to watch pitch. I guess if he went yesterday, he probably goes next Tuesday. So we'll see. How about the Red Sox? We haven't talked about them and mentioned them. They're playing again today in Minnesota. They got a doubleheader there. I think it's a doubleheader, maybe not. They've won 9 in a row. I mean, we were talking about how bad that they were at the beginning of the season after dropping the first 3 to the Orioles. And since then, they haven't lost. Played some decent teams.
Alex Verdugo went 5-for-8 yesterday. That is an impressive performance. Any day you can go 5-for-8.
They got the Yankees in last place with the American League East.
Again, I'll say the same thing I said the last time we talked about this. Red Sox fans, savor that. It's a great story. It is a great story.
I'm going to keep winning. Who knows? It's baseball. Yeah. There's weird things that happen in baseball from time to time. Weird things can happen. Dodgers, though, are just rolling. Giants are a little bit of a surprise for me. That they've won 8 games. Johnny Cueto pitched another solid contest last night. He almost had a complete game shutout in his first start of the season against the Rockies. But L.A. is off to the start that we expected them to be at 10-2. They're an unbelievable team.
I think San Diego too, and they have had a bunch of injuries, and they're 8-5, which isn't overly impressive when you look at it, but they get healthy, and we know how good that lineup is.
Losing to the Pirates isn't optimal.
No.
And they've somehow managed to win 5 games so far this season. Atlanta is another team in last place. It's lost 4 games in a row. The Cardinals swept the Marlins in Miami, and I just that team to me looked like just not very good. Some of their young pitchers are hurt, and it's not the team that they had a year ago, but the Braves can't beat them. They're down today. 3-0. It'd be the Braves' 5th loss in a row. The Braves lineup is too good not to hit, and they aren't. I know Braves fans are expecting a big season this year, but they are they can't hit.
Acuña's playing well, so everybody else got to catch up to him.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He's hitting .447 and 6 home runs, 12 RBIs so far,
and a lot of bat toss.
A lot of those. Yeah, he likes that.
Yeah, he can get after that. Okay, let's see. We will take phone calls today, 460-WWLS, 888-285-WWLS, 460-9957. Anything on your mind today, we will be happy to discuss. Yes, it does sound like I'm in a tunnel. We are working on that, hopefully.
I have some tips, maybe, because I had a guy who just called in. AM sounds pretty good. I was listening to that, 9:30 AM, and the app sounds good, too, or streaming online.
People ask all the time, like, if I'm at home, I'm listening on the computer.
Yeah, no, that's a great way to listen.
Little bit of latency, but I mean, I'm on usually the computer preparing for the show or working on things, and so the computer's the best way to listen. And if you're in your car, it's easy to stream it.
Mm-hmm.
Very easy to stream it. So yeah, 9:30 a.m. is another option. Hopefully we can get this transmitter fixed pretty quickly.
Episode 2.
Okay, all right, sounds good. NCAA transfer. The NCAA, I thought, made a good ruling. Especially for this year, where you can transfer without losing a year of eligibility. You can only do it once. If you want to transfer a second time, then you have to submit a waiver to be immediately eligible. That really is going to shake up things in college sports next season, if they already weren't being shaken up by the transfer portal, especially in college basketball. But they're really... It has not worked as a deterrent to allow or force players to sit out a year with a transfer. Transferring is still, I mean, it's more and more and more prevalent in college sports. So getting rid of the 1 year sitting out period, to me, it doesn't change a whole lot in my opinion. So I think that's a good rule. I do like the restrictions or the attempt at restrictions on guys transferring multiple times. I saw that Doug had tweeted this out sometime in the last week, that there was a player in college basketball that was going to play for his 4th different team in 4 seasons. That's not good for the sport. And really, to be honest with you, it's not what college basketball should be about. I mean, there's still an academic element to it. I think it would be very difficult to get a quality education if you're going to a different school every year, working on a degree, just based on some of the courses and electives you've taken and things like that. So, I do think that there needs to be some reining in on transfers. I'm just not sure how to do it. It's very difficult. We've talked about this with Lincoln Riley. I get Lincoln's frustration. I don't want a kid leaving my campus and going to another campus and I'm going to compete with him next year. But at the end of the day, if a kid decides that's ultimately what's best for him, then the legal system is going to tell you that you're going to have to allow that. I mean, you can't really control people's ability to do those things today in that sense. Unless college athletics wants to put, again, just some kind of hold to it fast and firm. Like the waiver of the second transfer, the NCAA says, well, we're going to look at this and we're going to be much more strict about who we grant waivers to. Okay, well, let's do that then. Let's be strict about it. Don't approve transfers. Like I can tell you this, Oklahoma Secondary Schools Activities Association, they're very strict on transfers. Very strict. Now, some people might disagree in a case here or a case there. There's protocol and procedure that you have to go through to do it, but they don't grant everybody's that wants to move. And those are kids in high school.
Right.
So you have to be vigilant about who you're going to allow to skirt the rules.
I just think you need to be consistent too about it, right? Because that's part of what really frustrates me with the NCAA is you'll grant a waiver for one guy for no discernible reason, but another guy has like a sick grandma and you won't grant his waiver. That stuff makes no sense to me. So definitely in that sense, I think that this is a win for student athletes.
The only thing that makes sense about the NCAA is they don't make sense. That's consistency.
The leadership
at the top, it's a difficult position to be in because they all are administrators or were at certain schools or conferences, and they're trying to look out for everybody's best interest. It's the same as a commissioner in professional sports. It's very difficult for a commissioner to punish franchises within his leagues because basically – they're all a group of the same people and they all, hire him and he all works for the rest of them. So it's a tough spot to be in there. We can get more into the transfer portal. I know people have probably a lot of strong opinions on it. It's always going to work well for Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. It will work really well for Oklahoma football. Lincoln Riley is considered to be the best offensive coach in the country. And every year, if a guy's really good, and wants to leave, and there's a spot for him at Oklahoma, they're going to be getting a lot better people than they watch walk out the door. For sure. We'll be curious to see their running back transfer this year from Tennessee, Eric Gray.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how Lincoln uses him, no doubt about it. You know, there's only five sports that they don't allow these transfers anyway.
Basketball, men's and women's, football, baseball, softball, right? Is that it?
I think it's men's hockey. Men's hockey.
Men's hockey. Okay.
And obviously those are the ones that generate most of the revenue.
That's right. Softball you can transfer immediately and be eligible. That's right. Oklahoma's had a bunch of transfers there. Another instance in which state school has benefit. Some of the recruits that aren't playing, yeah, you're going to lose those. They're going to leave. They're going to go into other places, but you're going to get a lot of outstanding transfers. Let's take a break. T&W Tire, 25 North Council Road here, just a block north of Reno on the west side of Council. Look for the red and blue T&W Sports Animal Special today. Any set of four tires when you mention the sports animal. Stay tuned. More of the Middle of the Day Show coming up. Royce Young in the 1 o'clock hour as well.
Your source for total sports coverage.
10% off a set of 84 tires when you mention the sports animal. It's the sports animal special today. It's not just tires. They do it all here. Full service shop for all of your automotive needs. Big, small, fleets, personal, individual. They got you here at T&W Tire, 787-6711. They also carry the full line of BG products to help keep your car looking good, smelling good, and running good. So come see us today here at 25 North Council Road and hang out. Need an oil change? They can accommodate that for sure. Here's some good stuff. Pete Rose. He's going to be selling some picks. Pete Rose is 80 years old. That's hard for me to believe. That's pretty shocking. I mean, I get it. I've seen Pete Rose a few times hanging out at the Mirage in Vegas in the sports book, betting the ponies, Every once in a while, it'll be a different place. Going to be $89 a month for the picks.
Worth it?
No, it's not worth it. Pete Rose, I don't think his contacts in baseball are very good at this point. Yeah. How does he know who's going to win a baseball game? Picking baseball games are really, really difficult to do. There's all kinds of things that can happen.
Sure. Sure. Was he very successful? I knew he bet on baseball. Was he successful at it?
I don't know. Successful betting on baseball? I would say no. I don't know. Was he successful betting on horses? I don't know. I mean, betting on horses is absolutely the hardest thing to win at. I mean, it's virtually impossible. If you're not a wise guy in horse racing, you're probably losing. There's a lot of people with knowledge of what's happening in races that you might not have that makes it difficult to win, especially when you got to beat the parimutuel pool. There's like 18% of the money coming out of it. So that's a difficult existence for him. But he seems to be generally a pretty miserable person when I've been around him at spots. People have asked him for autographs or things like that, and he charges for those. I guess that's the way that he makes money, but he doesn't usually treat them with much respect. So this is not going to help him, I think, get into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Probably feels like he's not getting in anyway. It's probably a posthumous induction, too, I mean, if it ever happens, because he seems to be getting in the way of himself when he's still alive. So,
just a cash grab, right? That's all it is. I'm not going to judge anybody for that.
He's working for a company that basically does these kind of things that sells touts. So it's not just like him setting up his own website and getting after it. So I'll let you know how that goes for Pete Rose. You probably won't know. All right, there was something else I wanted to talk about this segment that I lost my train of thought that Pete Rose article on ESPN, it distracted me significantly what we were going to get into in this segment. We did have some other news today. LaMarcus Aldridge retired, like, right after, playing a couple of games ago. Very sudden retirement. He has an irregular heartbeat, and so it's time for him to call it quits. That was kind of stunning development, because he's on a team where really not a whole lot is being asked of him, and, got a chance to win a ring for sure.
Yeah, that's why he went there, right? He wasn't going there for just to hang out with some buddies. I mean, he's going to win a ring. So, yeah.
It's a weird health deal. I mean, like, a regular heartbeat, I think that can happen. Certainly a lot of people deal with that. It can be managed, even for a professional athlete. Now, if I'm 35 years old and I think that there's something wrong with my heart, do I want to run out there every night and a chance that I don't, something happens and I don't make it? But you would think that rather than just saying, yeah, hey, I had a regular heartbeat, it was scary next morning, and we can't figure out a way to play with that. Or anyway, he did say that he had considered and consulted with a lot of different medical experts. So that's understandable.
That last line stuck out to me in his statement. You never know when something will come to an end, so make sure you enjoy it every day. I could truly say I did just that.
And he was a good player for a lot of years. I don't know that this does a lot of damage to the Nets championship hopes. I think they have enough other guys that can that they can rely on to win a title. But sad to see a guy have to retire right in the middle of the season.
And he killed the Thunder in some certain playoff games. I just felt like he was automatic. Every time he would go to that mid-range post up, felt like it was going in.
He's like the last of a dying breed there,
truly,
right? The pick
truly.
And pop mid range guy. I mean, I remember watching him play Norman when he was at UT. That guy's always had a absolute wet jumper, man. It's going in. I mean,
yeah, he snaps the net, no doubt.
But the league going away from that. Serge Ibaka is a very similar player. Serge, really good in the mid-range. Mid-range jumpers, you can almost count. It's a surprise when he takes a shot that doesn't go in. So that was a little bit of sad breaking news today. I got a little report from Blue Ribbon College Basketball. They listed the best hires of the college basketball season so far. And so it was an interesting report because they didn't, it's not a, this is not clickbait. I mean, I've already subscribed, right? So the Blue Ribbon is real meat and potatoes college hoops. And in the article today, they said, hey, look, we're not going to be critical of anybody, but we can take with it from what you want. We have our opinions on every one that was hired, but here's the list of the best. OU did not make this list. Best hires in college basketball. They've got Chris Beard at UT. They have Hubert Davis at North Carolina. They have Shaka Smart at Marquette. One that's very much under the radar, Craig Smith for Utah, who made the transition from Utah State to Utah. And then Kim English, George Mason, one more, Mike Woodson at Indiana. They like all those hires. No mention of Porter Moser at Oklahoma. Didn't say, again, that they didn't love it or hate it, but just didn't make the list of the top hires. I think the interesting part of the Shaka Smart to Marquette move was this, and I thought always this was how it worked at Texas and why it was tough for him. He's going to get back to recruiting his kind of guys, one former Smart assistant said. Too many times we had to take five-star recruits we felt like we had to take that probably weren't the best fit. Another coach that was on Smart staff, he'll do well at Marquette, better fit. He doesn't do well with all the extra stuff. He just wants to coach basketball, spend time with his players, too much other BS at Texas.
He's already
makes a lot of sense to me.
He's already hit the recruiting trail hard. I think he signed five guys, including one of them flipped from Texas, and then a bunch of other guys like in the area, which is not a bad area for basketball. Really good talent in that area. So he's already hitting the recruiting hard.
No question. It's a great area for recruiting. I mean, not only Wisconsin, but Chicago. I mean, you can recruit Indiana, a lot of those places. It's in very near proximity. But that's 100% the problem with Texas. It's a problem with Texas in football, too. Like, you can go out if you have – if you go someplace and some guy is plastered everywhere on Rivals and this and camps, and he's running a 4.340 and he's bench pressing a house and all those kind of things, and he's a five-star player, and you just feel like, well, we got to take him, but he might not necessarily be our kind of guy, as opposed to what Alabama, I think that they can kind of choose what their five stars are. They've done that well in recruiting. It's important to sign players that are really good, but it's also important to be able to coach the players that you get that are really good players too, or – In college basketball, have some guys that develop and not just leave after 1 year. I mean, that is a tough existence to go through. And Texas, even, you know, freshmen that are projected to be really, really high NBA picks sometimes don't have great freshman years in college basketball. So it's been tough for a lot of those players to come to Texas and then leave.
Well, that's spot on. I mean, that's what they've been doing incorrectly, is getting those types of guys. And it's with football, right? I think you mentioned that. It's the same problem.
It is. I think Texas is a tougher job. People think, they look at Texas, they look at the resources, and they put blinders on about everything else that goes on there that's bad. Meddling in the athletic department. If it were that great of a job, people would win at it. I don't think Shaka Smart's a bad basketball coach. I think he's a really good basketball coach. It's hard to take a mid-major to the Final Four. They've had other success in the tournament. And his guys played a certain way. They played tough, pressed, do a lot of the things that maybe some of the guys at UT wouldn't want to do.
I'm just saying, I respect Chris Beard losing his defensive guru, who's now the head coach at Tech, right? Mark Adams, is that his name? Mark Adams.
Yes.
And it's got to be the same thing. And he's ran a similar thing at Texas Tech. They're very hard-nosed. So I'll be interested to see how he does. I don't think that necessarily bodes well for him.
It's crazy of all the stops that Chris Beard had made before, man. I mean, thinking of all those days that he had coached at, you know, the lower level. Here's what Chris Beard's going to do at Texas. And it's already started. He's going to do the same thing he did at Tech. They'll go find one or two guys out of Dallas that are really good players, maybe not five stars, four stars, but as Gottlieb told us a couple weeks ago, you're going to get better players at Texas than you will at Texas Tech just by virtue of everything, school, all that. Then he's going to go get a bunch of transfers. And that's why they'll be good. because I don't think, you know, every year trying to win the recruiting war hasn't worked for UT. Bringing in guys like Miles Turner, Mo Bamba, I can continue to go on and on down the list of guys that stay for 1 year and they're not ready physically to play against older, better guys, and then they leave and you have to recreate the wheel all the time. That's not how you win, man. Just because you can do it at Texas, just because you can go get those star recruits, that's not necessarily a recipe for winning college basketball games, man. Go hit the transfer portal. That's what they've been doing at Tech, and they've been doing it really successfully. Find a couple guys you know they're going to be in the program for 4 years. Then maybe go get a couple guys. You can't just go out and take a whole roster full of elite recruits. It's not getting it done. We got to take a break. We're here at T&W Tire. We got another hour of the middle of the day show coming up, and we will talk with Royce Young about things going on in the NBA. Anything else that's on your mind, we'd love to have a phone call. 460-WWLS, 888-285-WWLS. Stay tuned to your leader in sports, 98.1, the Sports Animal.
Hey, this is Jim Traber. I want to invite you.
And I-35. I got caught in the city the other day, and it was around rush hour time, and that was such a mess. It was
it gets brutal over there.
Jammed back up all the way up the Broadway extension.
That will send the blood pressure upwards, no doubt about it.
It was my phone. The app was trying to send me it was trying to send me out to Choctaw to get around it. I just kind of waited through it, but that's a part about living like in Norman, you know. I mean, once I get back to Norman, pretty much I'm good, right?
You're there.
No need to be driving all around Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
Don't like the traffic.
I remember that life whenever I lived in Norman.
I wouldn't do well in a city that really had legit traffic problems.
Houston, can you imagine?
Houston.
LA.
Yeah.
Might be the worst.
Los Angeles is bad. New York is clearly bad.
Underrated bad traffic city is Austin. That is a city that completely outgrew its plan very quickly.
Its infrastructure? Yeah.
Yes.
No question about it. They've got the I-35 like on top and bottom of each other.
Yeah.
Going through downtown Austin.
It's crazy.
True story. A basketball Hall of Fame. You had some announcements today of who will be inducting the new inaugurees?
Yeah, I always like this. I always think it's pretty cool. Let's start with the lead here. Let's go with Kobe Bryant. Michael Jordan will be presenting the late Kobe Bryant. I think that is awesome. That is going to be one that you need to probably bring some Kleenexes for.
Just like at the funeral, I would assume that's going to be outstanding. That's a good choice. But you told me, and what was surprising, that Michael Jordan won't be finished after he inducts Kobe into the Hall of Fame.
Who
else will he be speaking for?
Another legend in the game, the women's game, Kim Mulkey, the Baylor coach. The very fiery, the very passionate Kim Mulkey. Michael Jordan. Cut from the same cloth, I would say.
They are cut from the same cloth. But what is their relationship to each other?
That's a great question. I'm not sure.
My Google search brought up Michael Jordan and Kim Jong-un before it got
different, brought up. Different Kim.
Kim Mulkey. So
no,
I don't know. Kim Mulkey was a heck of a – I mean, listen, she's a lot of things, but she was a great player for sure. And she is a competitor. And you don't have to know her to see that. That comes out in just basically anything. Okay. Who else will be
– Eddie Sutton?
Yeah.
Local flavor there. He gets three guys, which I think that's pretty cool. John Calipari, Kentucky coach, Bill Self, Kansas coach, and Sidney Moncrief, who's a NBA Hall of Famer himself.
Sidney Moncrief was one of the triplets at Arkansas where he had, hit that great run of players. You know who came very, 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 very close to beating Larry Bird was Arkansas. I believe they lost a game to Indiana State that year. Who was undefeated, maybe the Elite Eight, before they made it to the Final Four, that Arkansas might have been in that championship game against Michigan State and Magic Johnson. U.S. Reed was on that team. What a great name.
U.S. Reed. The U stands for Ulysses?
It could be. It's not the United States. It wasn't United States, Reed.
Yeah, probably not.
Reed Tomjanovich is going to go in with Calvin Murphy and Hakeem Olajuwon.
That's pretty cool. The great book out there about Rudy Tomjanovich after he got punched in the face by, was it Kermit Washington?
That's correct.
Washington, or, yeah, that's right. That's right. Nearly ended his life.
Tim Duncan is going to be inducted by David Robinson.
That's really cool. Big brother, basically.
Kevin Garnett and Isaiah Thomas. So that's just a little bit of a list of NBA. What'd you think of the Nets and Nets and Sixers last night? Sixers fans are getting on Kevin Durant sitting over there on the bench. KD sucks. KD sucks.
Really was a pretty close game, though, you know, for as short-handed as the Nets were. Only a six-point deficit at the end.
I thought there were some really good points they were making this morning on with Max and Stephen A. Smith. Really, the game was over. I mean, Embiid went to the bench, and so did Kyrie Irving. And then here come the Nets. And I was talking to you yesterday about this question. Like, if you have to have the, you know, two superstars, I mean, clearly the two you want are Durant and Harden. You can leave KD on the bench. I mean, if you have to say, all right, we're going to play with two guys. And if you're the Nets and you knew that you were going to acquire James Harden and you had Kevin Durant, would you not have maybe at the time, if you knew what was going to happen, there's no need for Kyrie Irving on that team.
Right.
And Kyrie Irving is such a, he is to me a very selfish player that is an incredible one-man threat. I mean, he can score in a variety of ways. His handles are incredible. Very rarely can people stay in front of him to the point where he can't get a really good squared up shot. And he had a good individual game last night, scoring, but it wasn't great in terms of his impact on winning the game. So I don't know what it does for the Nets not to play their studs in the regular season. Kyrie Irving was a minus 13 last night with 37 points. That's not a very good recipe.
I think come playoff time, that's going to hurt them because they'll want all those guys to play, assuming they're healthy. They won't have that chemistry.
It'll be your turn, my turn, your turn, my turn. One of the things that they did poorly last night, and Kyrie isn't a great facilitator of that, is 3-point shooting, getting open shots. Joe Harris only took two threes in last night's game. So Kyrie not really setting up those players for good looks. Joel Embiid was pretty good. He had 39. Tobias Harris has been banged up, but he had 26. And I do want to get into this discussion with Royce coming up. So what does the NBA do about this next year, Matt, about all of these stars sitting?
That's a tough question. That is a tough question. And it's a real problem. And Adam Silver has said it publicly that he thinks it's a big issue, and he's threatened the owners with severe penalties if they rest players, beyond what would be reasonable. But I mean, how can you? LeBron has a stomachache. You know what I mean? Like, how could the NBA know that? So it's definitely a big problem. And it's not, there's a lot of gray area. So there's solutions. I don't know that any of them are perfect. It might be Band-Aids on the problem. The first one I could think of, which will never happen, by the way, shortening the season.
I think that came to mind immediately for me, too. If it's that taxing on the players, then you can either lengthen the time of the season or shorten the season.
And this year we have a shortened season, but the problem is these games are all compressed. I mean, they're playing more games on average per week than any other time. So, and by the way, the shorten the season, there's no chance of that happening, right, with the owners wanting their revenue.
Is there a number of a ticket price that if you said, okay, for a season ticket holder, if you buy Thunder tickets, you're buying a 41-game package and then the playoffs? Do you take an increase per ticket if it goes to a 32-game home date? You play 32 home games?
Which would be 64 games total.
I mean, really, college basketball, you're playing, think of it this way. You're playing 30 games or 35 games in a college basketball season. It's more now than it was 20 years ago. But in an NBA season, I mean, that is a grueling season. I'll give that to the players. 82 games of basketball in the playoffs, that is a grueling season. I mean, that's a lot of wear and tear on the body.
So, yeah.
so much evidence to out there that NBA players, basically, their careers, for the most part, very few are better after 30 than before. So it clearly is tough on the body, right? I mean, we see quarterbacks now play until they're 43 winning Super Bowls. Major League Baseball players can play out of shape until they're 40 and still be outstanding or in shape, like Yadier Molina. We talked about catching 110 games a year for 16 years, still going as good as he ever has. But it's difficult on basketball players to do that. But it's a big problem.
You could start the season earlier. I think that's kind of what you're getting at, too. Lengthening the season so you don't have to cut down the number of games. Start in, I don't know, late September?
I think everybody's happy with the amount of money they're making, correct? Like the players.
More than that.
They're very well compensated. They've got a good deal. They got these guaranteed contracts where it's great. Players Association, the NBA, they're happy. They're making all kinds of money off the court from shoe companies, apparel companies, really anything. I mean, insurance companies at this point. So that's all good. They want to put their body through that wear and tear. Not as much potential for severe or critical injuries as NFL players face. Or being in situations where your body, concussions and head injuries and things like that that NFL players have to deal with, which NBA players don't necessarily do. I'm sure that there's a lot of chronic pain from using the body in the way that the NBA players do. But I think now, for me, if it was, I would give in to the point of let's have fewer games if it's going to make a guarantee that the best players play. And a lot of times it's becoming kind of coy. In a matchup that you had last night, we'd really rather not the Sixers see us at full strength. We don't want to give them a look of what it might potentially be in the playoffs when we have all our guys out there. So we're just in what should be a marquee game of the NBA. Let's just not try tonight. That's a really bad look.
Yeah. This is bad luck. I feel bad for the fans who drive, hours and hours to see a guy and, he's actually sitting out tonight. That sucks, too. It's a problem.
Well, Philly wins it last night. They've got a one-game lead over the Nets for the number one spot in the East. I think Philly takes that number one spot. I haven't looked at it as much just to see down the stretch which team has an easier schedule. Philly does have the Clippers coming up tomorrow. I just think that by virtue of those guys playing in Philadelphia and what you would want to rest is going to be an advantage for the Sixers. They got a pretty tough schedule here looking at it. They've got Steph comes to town on Monday, Phoenix on Wednesday, back-to-back at Milwaukee next week, back-to-back at home against Atlanta. Then it gets real easy. Then they go Spurs, Bulls, Rockets, Pels, Pistons, Pacers, Heat, Magic. That's a pretty manageable schedule for them, for sure. How about the Warriors, man? They're off the plane, on the plane after the game, after Steph, checking out the Sports Animal yesterday, hearing the great disrespect that he encountered, courtesy of us. He's been now in Cleveland tonight, playing the Cavs.
Yeah, you're welcome, Steph, first of all. That's exactly what we're talking about. This travel schedule is crazy.
He is on an epic run right now. I mean, these last nine games for him, it's probably about as good a run as he's had in his career. I mean, they set James Wiseman down, and he has just gone absolutely nuts.
And he's been the key of the defense. I mean, there's no who else do you key in on that team? I mean, teams are actively scheming to just shut you down, and he's still having an amazing season. He's incredible.
So here's the run that we're talking about. Last night he had a soft 42, an easy 42 against Oklahoma City. 14 of 20 shooting, 11 of 16. Lou Dort got his 42 on 32 shots. Steph got it on 20. He had 53 versus Denver on Monday, 38 versus Houston on Saturday, 32 versus Washington on Friday, 41 versus the Bucks on Tuesday, 37 against Atlanta, 36 against Miami, 32 against Chicago. So dating back to the 29th of March, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 games, lowest point total 32, highest amount of shots 26. That's what I'm talking about with Steph's efficiency. There are a lot of guys in the league that like to hoist it up 32, 34 times, Donovan Mitchell, whatever, that aren't near as good a scorer. or going to make near as many shots. Steph's shooting 50% from the three-point line in the month of April. So he's cranking it up. And certainly the Thunder's defense helped that percentage after last night's 11 of 16. He's getting rebounds too, man. Getting rebounds everywhere. So that was impressive for Steph. Hard to see what once was like something that you look forward to for however many months. A Thunder Warriors matchup with no fans and basically no Thunder.
Yeah. Last night. It's brutal. It's brutal.
All right, more NBA talk coming up with Royce Young. We will talk to him next here at TNW Tire, 25 North Council Road, 787-6711. Not just tires, they do everything here. Full line of BG products. Sports Animal Special is in effect today. 10% off a set of four tires. Just mention the Sports Animal, and they hook you up with the discounts. Stay tuned. Royce is next.
All things Oklahoma City.
Nice in person.
Yeah. A lot of games that I haven't been all that excited to go to lately, Mark. But last night I actually was kind of pumped. Steph still just, there's something electric about that guy and the way he snakes and weaves through the defense and find open shots and then just lets them fly. And, you know, when he's not even remotely open. But I think he's made 29 threes over his last three games, which is the most in NBA history over a three-game stretch. So, you know, there are people out there that still doubt the greatness of Steph for whatever reason. But, man, that dude can compromise a defense single-handedly in the way that very, very few players can. And he does it just in such a unique way. He's not this overwhelming athlete. He's not this towering figure where you got to send double teams because he's just going to outmuscle you. He's somebody that just stretches the floor, finds openings, and just devastates you with shooting. And he had a couple really nice finishes inside. People don't give him credit for that. He's a really, really crafty finisher around the rim. So old Tao Maledon and Ty Jerome didn't have much of an answer for him last night.
Why did Lou Dort opt out of last night's game?
I don't know. I just assumed he was being punished for scoring 42 or something, you know?
That's good stuff.
You know, I think that it's one of those things, though, Mark, in all seriousness, that, you know, the Thunder, I think they play 17 games over the next 31 days or something like that. So, you know, if there's any kind of nagging issue, if there's any kind of bumps or bruise, you know, I know that we can all kind of wink-wink at the tanking stuff, but also there is like a player wellness and health aspect here. It's been a big topic of conversation around the league just in the wake of Jamal Murray's injury that the schedule crunch is a huge deal. I've heard a number of executives very concerned about it. Agents are concerned about it. So, you know, I think that while it may be the type of thing where, yeah, might as well just go ahead and sit Lou Dort, when you're talking back-to-back games or four games and five nights or five and seven nights, it just makes all the sense in the world just to go ahead and sit these guys. You know, it just, you're not playing for anything anyway. So, you know, do your due diligence to make sure that you're protecting the players against what they can't control, which is a ridiculous schedule by the NBA.
All right, I completely agree with that. But so, say, back in the day, if my parents were telling me that I had to go to bed at 9 o'clock because it was a school night, but there was this one Monday night that, hey, look, you know, we're going to make an exception for you. We're going to let you stay up till 9:30 tonight so you can watch the halftime highlights. Well, then, you know, of course, then the next week I'm trying to say, okay, well, yeah, I mean, you let me last week, so I expect to stay up again this week. So this year, everything makes sense to me. If you want to rest a guy, I get it. That's fine. And all those things that you said, I bet if they had a chance to redo the schedule, they would have played less games. But what happens next year? I mean, you can't set this precedent of setting guys. I mean, and Matt and I talked about it. Do you reduce games? Do you lengthen the season with the same amount of games? But how are you going to get teams to stop just saying, oh, he's out tonight because of rest?
Yeah. I mean, it's an excellent question, Mark. I mean, it's a total you give a mouse a cookie type of thing. And the league has, I think, gritted teeth, kind of understood what teams are doing right now, and they recognize that this regular season in some ways is just kind of chalked as it is. But you're 100% right, because this has been trending in this direction for a number of years. I mean, the schedule is more difficult this year because of circumstances, but they still play 82 games. They still play, you know, 12 to 15 back-to-backs. Every team does. So they still have, you know, four and five nights to some degree. So this has been something that that teams have been keeping an eye on and starting to kind of move towards. You know, everybody kind of famously calls out the Spurs for what they did with national TV games, and the league took action against the Spurs for that sort of thing. But it really kind of highlighted the problems that, that exist. And all of this is within the context, too, Mark, of, you know, the NBA also has a big problem with these regular season games just feeling like they don't matter. And, you know, while they do, and holistically, I mean, you need a good seed, you want home court, you want, you know, you want to get into the playoffs. I mean, the games do matter kind of almost on a macro scale. But, like, within the moment, like that Nets-Sixers game, which was kind of like the game of the regular season to date so far, there wasn't this urgency to win it, really, for either team. I mean, it didn't feel that important. And, you know, I think that that kind of comes down to the fact of, you know, Kevin Durant, for good reason, is managing an injury as he comes back. But, you know, neither team, you know, I don't think it would have really been beyond the Sixers to say, you know what, Joel Embiid's going to sit this one. And that's a huge issue for the league if it's just so easily done. And I think you're exactly right that next year and the season after that, you're going to see these situations where star players, it doesn't matter who they're playing. I think they're more likely to play in the lower level games. I mean, you saw it with Durant that he played against the Hornets rather than the Sixers because it was like the easier game. It was going to be, you know, you want to go ahead and make sure you punch your ticket with that win, let Durant kind of get in a good rhythm against them and not the high intensity game against the Sixers. And that's a problem for the NBA.
All right, let's talk about this in the vein of the Thunder. So again, Lou Dort rests last night. He's 21. I mean, it doesn't seem to me that he would need a lot of rest. This is the ultimate, and Matt and I were having a text conversation last night. If you put Horford, Dort, and SGA out there with any combination of who's going to be a high rookie pick next year, this team's too good to tank to finish in the bottom five of the league. You can't do it. So if it does benefit them to do it, Royce, how is Sam Presti going to look at this? And really, to be honest, if you want to hit a sweet spot of tanking with all the picks that you've got coming up, I mean, you might be prudent just to deal SGA because he's too good to fit that narrative.
Yeah, I mean, that is kind of the – I mean, the Thunder are in a great spot overall because what we're talking about is that this rebuild may not be as long-term as it was once thought to be because SGA is that good. They do have some good young core players in guys like Lou Dort. Teo Maledon's, you know, showed promise. That, you know, they have this upside on the roster. But, like, that is kind of the elephant in the room with SGA is that, you know, is he too good to tank but not quite good enough to build you into an elite-level team? And I think that, you know, that could make you think that you got to take dramatic action, which is trade SGA, right? And so, like, now you got to, like, you know, totally commit to the rebuild because you need to completely bottom out, which was kind of their intention over a two- or three-year period, was stockpile all these high-level draft picks with their own picks. But at the same time, Mark, I mean, if you do that sort of thing, there is absolutely no guarantee. And honestly, the odds are not very good at all that you're going to draft a player in the top five that is as good as SGA. Like, I mean, there's, you know, you might think so. You might expect that Cade Cunningham or, you know, in a couple of years, Imani Bates or whoever it might be is the next big deal. But there's absolutely no guarantee that the lottery balls, A, bounce your way and that you get one of those top three picks. I mean, even if you're the Timberwolves, who have the worst record in the league, yeah, they have a 14% chance of number one pick, but they also have a percentage chance to get the number five pick. So, like, it may not go your way. So to take that risk would be massive. And if it goes the wrong way and you trade SGA, sure, you may pull in some more picks and you may pull in some more stuff and you tank for a couple of years. You also might have just recreated the Harden trade 2.0. You know, you might have just traded away a franchise-level player and you watch Shea Gilgeous-Alexander make five All-Star teams while you're stuck in this cyclical rebuild. And, you know, that's the sort of thing that costs you a job. So I just can't see that they would do that sort of thing. There's too much risk in that level. So what I see more happening here, Mark, is that, you know, they are clearly trying to accelerate down to the bottom of the standings as fast as they can this year, and they're doing a pretty good job of it. I mean,
they're doing an amazing
They're very close to getting for the Cavs passing them, or the Cavs did pass them. And they're close to the Magic passing them, so they could get to the fifth worst record or even the fourth worst record. So their chances are going up really well. And if they got Evan Mobley or they strike gold this year, and now you start putting together that young core, you start feeling like maybe they're not going to, like, jump to that elite-level status where you've got, like, three super young, you know, top-five caliber-type players the way that they thought they might. But you also might not need it. You know, so there's this balance of where, you know, Sam Presti's letter that he wrote in the Oklahoman, I think he talked about, I think he used a phrase, something like extraordinary success. Well, I think a lot of people put that as, you know, championship and multiple championships. And how do you get there? Is SGA good enough to be like the backbone of one of those types of teams that accomplish extraordinary success? I don't know. But I do think that the Thunder can at least minimize the length of this rebuild based on the fact that he is really good. So that's kind of like the, you know, the rock and the hard place that the Thunder find themselves in. It's a good place to be. They're in a really good place. They're better than they thought they were. But at the same time, they might not be bad enough to find, you know, to make that huge leap back to the very, very top of the mountain.
All right, I think that's an excellent breakdown. I mean, and that gives me a lot to think about, because it would for sure be a riskier move with potentially more downside to trade SGA. And just because you have high picks doesn't guarantee they're going to be good. And by no means does the fact that Oklahoma City once had Harden, Durant, and Westbrook mean that it's ever going to happen again. But
right,
I do think that if what you're telling me is right, then I think they do have so many assets that they can move around with to trade high into drafts or to put themselves in position. Again, you don't have to make the first pick to get the best pick in the draft. And so I do think
Steph
that
Curry was the seventh pick, right? Isn't that what
yes.
it was? I think he was the seventh.
Yeah, 14 for Kawhi and 15 for Giannis or vice versa, whatever.
Right.
But the Thunder, I would at least think next season with SGA that at least at the beginning of the year, and you never know with injuries or things like that, that, hey, look, we're going out here and we're going to play tonight and we're going to try to win this game. We're going to do everything we can to get that done at the beginning of next season. The good news for the Thunder is the Magic are so inept, Royce, that they may be oblivious to just tanking. I mean, they won last night against the Bulls. They may find a way to win some games where Oklahoma City, clearly, they found the sweet spot. It was tough all year to find it, but they're in it now. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
These performances leave no doubt about what's going to happen.
I mean, if I'm putting an over-under on how many wins, if it continues, now SGA is going to come back. I believe that I've been told that the expectation is for him to play some games on the back end of this season. So, you know, they might win a couple of those. So, but, I mean, I'm thinking it's like maybe four total wins, maybe four somewhere.
I think that's a good number.
Range, 4 to 5. So, like, you know, I do think that they could find themselves in a good spot. And I should also point out this about SGA. Since we're talking about him, you know, he's due for an extension, a rookie level extension, coming up next season. And so the Thunder will kind of have to make a decision on him. And, you know, to me, he's going to get paid. He's going to, you know, if you don't give him max level money, he's going to restricted free agency and he's getting that from somewhere. So, you know, my expectation is that the Thunder will lock him up for a long-term contract and you'll put him as part of your core going forward. And if you got to make a decision about him down the line, then so be it. But, I agree with you, Mark, about next year. If you end up drafting, you know, if all goes well and you get Kate Cunningham, awesome. If you get, you know, Jonathan Kuminga, whoever it might be, like you get one of these good young players, now you put them in your system, and you put them in your organization, and you want to get back to that kind of feeling of winning culture. And, you know, I think the Thunder are kind of testing it a little bit right now. I think that they showed early in the year that they absolutely do kind of have a secret sauce within the organization. Now, they've kind of trimmed the edges down to such effect. Now they're comfortable with getting beat by 40. I don't know if they're actually – I don't think the organization's comfortable with getting beat by 40 by any means. But, I mean, that's just kind of the situation that they're in. But you do want to kind of go back to recreating that, like, that kind of identity that they had at the beginning of the year. And I think that they can do that. And I think that they'll be back in that situation where, look, if they're gonna win games and they're gonna start pushing forward, then so be it. Because also, the NBA hopes to have fans in the building next year. That's been this whole thing, Mark, too, that I think gets lost. This has been kind of the perfect storm to do this sort of thing. There's, you know, this built-in fan apathy where people just kind of aren't paying attention to it. People are gonna start paying attention again next year. I don't think Thunder fans are gonna be all that cool with showing up and seeing their team get beat by 45.
No,
like that's not going to go over all that well for a long term period, especially when people can see there's talent on this team and they're going to be saying, "Why aren't this?" I get that they're trying to rebuild, but like, I'm not that cool with SGA and Lou Dort getting beat up by 45.
Well, they've perfected it now. I mean, they're not competitive in a lot of these games. I think that they've done a good job with that. Nets and Sixers played last night. I mean, that was kind of a boring game, really. I mean, Philly led most of the way, and the Nets did make a little bit of a run. Who you got in the top spot in the East? Who's gonna win it, Philly or Brooklyn?
I think Philly will probably end up with the top seed just because, now that game essentially counted for two games. It gives them the tiebreaker, and they win the game itself, so that bumps them up. But, I just think it feels more important to the Sixers to get that sort of thing. I think it's been something that they've been a little more focused on. The Nets are that super team level group where, if we get it, if we don't, that's okay with us. Now, things changed a little bit for the Nets today, obviously, with the LaMarcus Aldridge news, which, oh no, boo-hoo Nets, then so tough for them. I mean, it's a horrible thing for LaMarcus Aldridge personally, and absolute best wishes to him, of course, but, for the Nets themselves, I think they'll be okay. he was a helpful player, and he just made them a juggernaut even more of that, but I think the Nets are the favorite in the East, but I think the Sixers will end up with the top seed.
Good. We had Tim McMahon on the show yesterday, and he wanted to let everyone know that he is not coming after your title as the most wholesome man in the NBA, even though he's settling down dramatically.
Yeah. Well, he is trending that way. I mean, but that's good. It's good to see Tim. He's come full circle. It's been a long journey for Tim, but maybe I've had a positive influence on him. Maybe that's what it is. And it didn't. Luckily, it didn't go the other way, and that he didn't have any influence on me. So.
There's I don't know, man.
Multiple wholesome ones.
I mean, I would like to aspire for wholesomeness as well. But hanging out down in Bricktown with Mark Cuban and Amy Schumer—that sounds like it had a lot of potential for fun. But I mean, just to be around, right? I mean, you're always you pick up some good stories.
I'm not saying there's any regrets out there. I don't think it's any regrets. He's got a good run.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good talk, Royce. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks, man. Have a good weekend.
Okay.
Royce Young, ESPN.com. We're at T&W Tire here at 25 North Council Road. Sports Animal Special is today. Four tires. You buy a set of four, 10% off. Pretty good deal. They also carry the full line of BG products. It's where I get my car serviced and maintained. Here they do a great job. So T&W Tire, 787-6711. Back to wrap things up on a Thursday right after this.
Check out the Sports Animal
Browns. Matt, you mentioned yesterday run defense, one of his strengths. Hard to, especially guys that play like the nose guard spot, the one or the zero gap, really statistically aren't going to stand out. But the guys that do that and do it really, really well are huge impact players for their team. So if Jadeveon Clowney can stop the run, playing on the other side of Myles Garrett and shore up the defense, then that's a good move for Cleveland. I'll tell you what, man, the Browns, as we get towards the season, Mr. Ravis, I think the Browns wave is going to rise.
You think so? Did you hear their Vegas win total? The Ultimate was trying to get me to take the over, and I think I did take the over.
Yeah, because most of the Vegas win totals are kind of in the middle, right? I mean, they're all about the same. I would say the Browns win total is 10.5.
Yeah. No, it's 8.5. 8.5.
Oh,
if it was 10.5, I think I would have to, I'd probably take the under on that, but I'd have to think about it.
We'll have to look at the schedule. So is the 17th game going to, that's kind of screws the Vegas win totals, right?
Yeah, no, that's including the 17th game. They have that extra game.
It's 8.5, including the 17th game?
Unless I'm misremembering, I think that's what the Ultimate told me. Maybe you can.
And Jim thinks it's under?
I don't think he said definitively one way or the other. I just think he said, don't smash the over on that is what he was warning.
I disagree. I'll make that bet with him right now.
I mean,
I'll make that bet
those,
right now.
My only hesitancy there is that seems too easy. And usually we know with Vegas when it seems too easy, it's, you get more than you bargain for.
They're playing the third place schedule. Right?
Right. That's right.
I mean, I've had a couple other things I want to talk about, but this has automatically become the most important thing on my mind right now. I mean, that's a good football team.
They didn't get worse from last year. I think they got better. They improved where they needed to in the defensive backfield. John Johnson from the Rams, I think, is going to help them. I said yesterday that the Clowney signing is a little bit overrated, but I don't. That doesn't hurt them by any means.
Who they're going to play is. The schedule isn't available yet, but who they're going to play is. I have to go back and I'd have to find that. They won 11 games last year. I think over 8.5 is easy. I mean, they've passed the Steelers, right?
Think so.
Yes. I mean, the Steelers are in a rebuilding mode. There's no doubt about it. There's a lot of talent on Cleveland. But and part of, you know, Cleveland had massive injuries last year. Massive injuries on the offensive line. Massive injuries in the secondary. You can't predict how healthy they're going to be, but they can't be any hurt more than they were last year, and they won 11 games. I mean, this has nothing to do with liking Baker Mayfield or not liking Baker Mayfield. That team can run the football. Baker's not a bad player. They've got multiple tight ends that are good guys. They've got one of the best defensive players in the league. That, I don't know what, where you, I don't know. I don't know what's negative about the.
Everywhere I'm looking it up, it's 9.5. I haven't seen 8.5 anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, that was a big miss for me by two games on a projected Vegas win total. 10.5 is a high total. I guess.
I think 9.5, you'd have to really think about it either way.
10-7. I think the Browns will be 10-7. They added the, I do know that game that they're going to play, they're playing the, one of the issues might be the fact that they're out of conference games or against the NFC West, right? Or no, they're not. Because the Cardinals were going to be the 17th game.
That's right. They'll play the Cardinals.
I remember talking about that. So they don't play the NFC West out of conference, which is the toughest division. They don't play the they played the Cowboys this year, right? So they don't play the NFC East. Probably the NFC South for Cleveland.
Including the Cardinals, their opponents, the Browns opponents, went 140, 130, and 2 in 2020. That is the ninth
above average.
Ninth hardest schedule, but the easiest schedule in the AFC North. In terms of last year's win totals.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, Pittsburgh and Baltimore obviously have the two toughest schedules.
I like the over. I think they can split with Baltimore, split with the Steelers for sure. At least 3-3 in the division, maybe 4-2. For sure 4-2 over 2-4, I would think. Had some other NFL draft stuff to talk about. It's kind of fascinating for me. Outside of Taven Jenkins and Zaven Collins, who are pretty much guaranteed to go in the first round, where the rest of the Oklahoma kids are going to go, second, third, fourth round, Ronnie Perkins, Rodarius Williams, Creed Humphrey. There was one mock draft on CBS that had Zaven Collins going at 11 to the Giants. Most mocks have him in the 20s. This one has him all the way up at number 11. I think this kid has much potential, undiscovered potential. Frame to add weight, strength, all of those things to play in the NFL at a different level. Athletic enough to be a high school quarterback, that athleticism really showed through last year on some interceptions and returns and things that he did. I think he can maintain his athletic ability at a bigger weight. He's going to be an NFL stud. Matt, we done. The Ultimate will be at the Yale Theater today, right next to the Coney Islander. I've enjoyed hanging out at T&W Tire with you, 25 North Council Road. Make sure you ask for the Sports Animal Special. If you buy four tires, 10% off. Tomorrow, we will be at Bob Moore Ford, Southeast 89th and I-35. And that's a wrap for this week. Stay tuned. Keep it right here on your leader in sports on 8.1, the Sports Animal.